The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Team Hunger Force, and you're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, which means you must own you an iPod. Ooh la la, ain't you fancy? I used to have a Nano Shuffle until it got stuck in my meat and then got covered in that German mustard dipping sauce I got inside of me, and now it don't work no more.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And joining us today to talk about her new album coming out called Alter Ego, we have the musician who is in a genre, man, it's such a unique genre, rap, hip-hop, and nerd culture. We welcome Lex, the Lexicon Artist. Lex, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hello, everyone. I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
And as our listeners can tell, we are all in different locations because of the quarantine. I hope everyone's playing it safe out there too, but we're definitely doing our part because I don't want the Rona. I don't know about you guys.
Hard pass on the Rona.
I haven't changed my lifestyle one bit because I don't go anywhere, so it's perfect for me.
still licking doorknobs, huh, Jack?
Only at my house.
I was doing quarantine before it was cool.
Yeah.
It's been weird for me because I spent a lot of time at home and I spent a lot of time going out at night just because of the nature of my job. So it's been, it feels familiar and it doesn't at the same time.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I can relate to that because I like to just sometimes run and get something to eat really quick. And now I can't do that. So I'm kind of forced to
get around
the kitchen. It's been hell. I'm exaggerating. There are people actually dealing with hell situations out there. I don't want to downplay that. But, yeah, it's nonetheless, this quarantine's already starting to wear a little bit. But we're going to have fun today, nonetheless. In our retro roundtable, we're going to be talking about musicians who have made cameos, appearances in movies, television shows, video games, etc. Something we have never done. I'm very excited to do. And then we're going to turn our full attention over to Lex and talk more about her music and then the second album that's going to be released March 31st, which is available for pre-order, Alter Ego. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what you're hearing here and you want to show your support, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And for $5 a month, you get access to the Canned Air Patreon Pod, a show we do only for our patrons. We release that once a month, and we've been doing that for over 2 years now. So there's a good catalog on there and lots of goodies to come. I've been preaching it week after week. People go check it out. And another thing really quick, Canned Air now has a new phone number that you can call into and leave your cheers, your jeers, cease and desist, your ideas for the show, whatever it is you want. You can give us a call at 614-254-3332. Don't expect us to answer because we're not. I just leave that phone off and periodically check for messages. So feel free to give us a call and, again, leave us ideas for the show or just a fun message you might like to hear on the show. We can't wait to hear from you. Again, 614-254-3332. Randy, what am I forgetting?
So, gentlemen, why don't you wake up with Canned Air? We are currently syndicated on two different internet radio stations. First one is Redline Radio. Check us out at RedlineRadioLLC.com from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. in the morning every Monday through Friday. And then we're also on CuyahogaValleyRadio.com from 9 to 10 in the morning. So, you know, wake up, laugh with us, get your day started.
There it is.
It's okay, ladies. You can listen, too.
I was thinking the same thing. Why just gentlemen, Randy?
I quit.
And with that, let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
And here we go.
All right, musicians in movies, who would like to kick us off this week? All right, I'll kick
Jack
us off.
Should. Or not.
I'll go ahead and just throw one out there. This has got to be my favorite. Obviously, I'm a little biased. Any listener knows I'm a huge fan of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Tom Petty had a cameo in the Kevin Costner movie in the 90s called The Postman. Does anybody recall that?
Oh, yeah, yes. I knew you were going to pull that one. I knew it.
Oh, of course you did. Of course you did. Lex, have you ever seen The Postman?
No, I haven't. You said mid-90s or early 90s?
I would say mid to late 90s. I can't remember if it was before or after Waterworld, but right around in that era. But it was like set in the, you know, it was a post-apocalyptic future. And just, you know, normal people were, I don't know, like the main bad guy who was like the... like the leader of this bad guy organization. I can't remember exactly what their deal was, but he had made a speech about how he was just a assistant like at a copy store. You know, like all these power were just all these people were going out and finding power and seizing land, kind of Walking Dead like without the zombies, I guess.
That sounds really cool. I feel like any movie that's before the year I was born, which was 1994. I, like, almost, for the most part, am completely unaware.
You were three.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, 93. Okay, got it.
No, you were three. It was 97.
Oh, word. Yeah. I do know some movies from 97. I know that I watched Fight Club, like, in the mid-2010s, and that one was from 1997, right? But, yeah, like, any movie from before when I was alive, I feel like I was... unfortunately unaware of, but this one sounds really good.
You know the good movies from then.
I found it to be a fun movie. I honestly did, but I think people really shit on it. I don't think it got good reviews at all. And again, if this came after Waterworld, I'm sure that had something to probably do with it as well.
Yeah.
I think the only part that I've ever seen in that movie is when Tom Petty was on it.
Yeah, and what's cool is he plays himself. He never addresses himself as Tom Petty, but when Kevin Costner sees him, he looks at him kind of cross from him, and he goes, wait a minute, I know you. He's like, you used to be famous. And he just kind of says, used to be, but not anymore. He was kind of like the mayor of some colony that lived in this, some like little town and built into the site of this big dam. Do you remember that?
No, I just remember... I can't remember. They were getting onto a zip line or something like that.
Yes.
It was like at the end. Yeah. That's like the only part that I saw of it.
Yeah. There's like a big zip line ran from the dam down to the ground or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was surprised because I was like, well, that's what Tom Petty sounds like. Because I always, his voice, singing voice was totally different than his speaking voice.
Yeah. You're famous. Used to be. Not anymore. All right, who would like to go next? Lex, would you like to go next?
So this one was one I forgot about, but when I did some research, I was reminded of it, and I was reminded that I liked this one a lot. Do you guys know The Interview from 2014, the movie about North Korea?
Oh, the James Franco and Seth Rogen film?
Didn't see it, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
It's really good.
I've heard it was amazing.
I know where you're really going with this, but go for it.
Yeah, well, there is a cameo that Eminem makes in this movie. It's really good.
Yep.
And it's the real Eminem. And he shows up on James Franco's like TV show, because in the movie, James Franco is a TV show host, and they are trying to find ways to like get better ratings. So they're trying to find certain guests to have on the show. Eventually, they invite like Kim Jong-un or James Franco gets invited to North Korea to interview Kim Jong-un, and he's like, you know, he and Seth Rogen are like, all right, this is a great opportunity, let's go. But before that, they get, like, this really big, like, ratings bump from Eminem beyond the show. And it's just, like, a really, really funny interview where Eminem is, like, extremely deadpan. And I don't even know how to do it justice without you, like, going to watch the scene. But I think, like, Eminem pulled it off super well, where it's just like they're just talking about stuff, and you know, asking some very, like, innocent questions, and, you know, James Franco says some ridiculous rap lyrics, and then all of a sudden Eminem is like, yeah, when I, like, talk about gay people, it's because I'm gay. And like, he just, like, glosses over that, and then James Franco was like, wait, what the fuck did you just say? And then they're like, yeah, and he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm gay. Like, I thought I made it really obvious. I've been leaving a breadcrumb trail of gayness all across my album. He just plays it like a straight man, and it's really great. And like, obviously both of those actors' reactions are really funny. Like, Seth Rogen goes like, oh my god, this is the most important moment in gay history. Like, when he says that, he's like, oh my god, Eminem is gay on our show.
It was really funny too, because the like, he is so homophobic, or played to be. And then I don't know I'm assuming it was probably before, but there was, like, the VMAs where Sacha Baron Cohen, dressed as Bruno, like, fell, like, off a zip line wearing, like, a thong, like, right into Eminem's lap with, like, his ass in his face, and he, like, freaked out. Do you guys remember that?
Uh-uh.
Oh,
no,
man.
The only thing I can think of... Yeah. Was years ago when Howard Stern came in on some kind of zip line as
Fart Man.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
His bare ass exposed. And I feel like he pissed somebody off that night by, I don't know if he brushed his ass over someone as he came over or what exactly happened. But yeah, that's what makes me think of.
It was similar, probably.
There's
always been so much talk about kind of Eminem's lyrics and, you know, what he says. Does he really mean what he says, especially his earlier stuff, you know? Like, and I don't agree with, like, a lot of, you know, slurs or, like, homophobia that exists right in the lyrics, but I just thought this was, like, a really interesting way to kind of flip that on its head, where he, in a fictional context, he's kind of offering, like, a retcon, like a re-explanation of the reasons why he included that. And it's just like, yeah, I'm gay. it's funny in, like, in the fictional context, you know?
Yeah. But it also, I think, shows that, you know, maybe he shouldn't be taken so serious on that front. I mean, who's to say? Maybe he is actually super homophobic. But I feel like if he were, that wouldn't be something he would do. I don't know.
I was gonna say, I think it came out that a lot of that was staged too, like his homophobia. So I don't know.
Yeah, because I remember, like, you know, people were he had mentioned something about Elton John in a song, and people were like, oh, you know, he hates Elton John, he hates homosexuals. But and then he not quickly, but they followed that with him and Elton John performing together.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really
good.
Yeah.
That was classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Really good. Good pick, too. Very good pick. Jack, who would like to go next?
I'll go next.
Do it.
Mine is from a video game from a while back called. Oh, crap. I just brain farted. Hold on, let me find out what it was.
Is it Brutal Legend?
Brutal Legend, that's it, yes.
It's on my list, too.
Is it? That game, Jack Black is the main character.
Yep.
It's not as Jack Black, he's just voicing the main character, and he's like this super... He's a horrible roadie, isn't he? He's just like, he thinks he's the best roadie, but he ends up having a big stage mishap that kills him and brings him into, like, this rock and roll realm. To where all these, there's tons of rock stars in it. I've only gotten far enough to see two, but like the game itself is a real-time strategy, kind of like Command and Conquer. So he's running around trying to find all these people to play, like make this big, great band rock show. And he runs into these guys on motorcycles, like trike motorcycles that are all beefed up. And one of them, you turn around and it's freaking Lemmy from Motorhead.
Really?
Yeah, it was so, and it's voiced by him too. It was so awesome. And then later on, you drive this car around, getting from place to place, and you can go into this underworld tunnel, and then the god of the underworld comes flying up and he lets you upgrade your car and stuff. And he turns around and it was freaking Ozzy.
Ozzy Osbourne, yep.
Yeah, really? I was loving it. Yeah, and it's, of course, it's voiced by him.
Yeah, and then let's see, Lita Ford and Rob Halford from Judas Priest also did voice work for that.
Even Kyle Glass is in it too, but he's like this big beefy body guy with Kyle's fat head on top. It's so hilarious. I died laughing when he turns around and it was Kyle. I'm like, no, it's Kyle.
You mentioned Ozzy. He also had a cameo in the Waterboy, but Little Nicky. Remember at the end?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say dig that movie out to relive it because it wasn't that good of a movie, but again, another one of those Sandler flicks that did not age well. Not age well at all.
Brutal Legend is a hidden gem, too. Not a lot of people played it, but a lot of people didn't like it because they didn't know it was the type of game it was, too. Everyone I know loved it, though.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I've got a copy of it downstairs right now.
Randy, you have a copy of every game downstairs right now.
Yeah, really?
Well, yeah. Ghosts in the attic and games in the living room, you know. That's how I roll.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. What's your next pick?
So I'm going to piggyback off of Jack on the video game thing, and we had done a video game music episode with Mike Coletti from Atomera last year, and in one of the comments to our post, I think it was Brett maybe, pointed out that we had missed Michael Jackson's contribution to Sonic 3. And oh. I had known that, and I had, like, the minute he said it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
I remember
so
that, too.
If you listen to, like, the intro in Sonic 3, like, when he first runs into Knuckles, you'll hear, like, the music change, and there'll be that signature, like, woo! Yeah,
really?
The woo, yeah. But he was supposed to have a lot bigger part in that, but that was right around the time, like, all the child stuff that he was accused of was going down, so Sega kind of, like, put it under wraps. But you can still hear, like, his musical influences and some of a little bit of his voice work throughout the game.
Wow, I didn't know that. It also makes me think of there was another game, Moonwalker, the Michael Jackson game Moonwalker.
Mm.
That was actually a really fun game.
It was hard, but it was fun.
Which was better, the arcade version or the console version?
I never played the arcade version. I figured they were the same game. They're not?
I always thought it was a little bit different. Maybe it was just because the graphics were and, like, animation was just a little bit cheaper like they always were.
Yeah, I think the sound was better on the arcade, too, as they usually are, so.
Fun game, though. It was a fun game.
Yes.
For sure. My next pick is going to be from the A-Team. Now, Jack, you might know who I'm about to mention because I've talked about it on the show before. It's been a while back, though. When I, though, say the A-Team.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're all aware of the A-Team here. Lex, are you aware of the A-Team?
No, what is it?
Okay. The A-Team is a show that used to be on in the 80s, and they made a movie of it in the, 2000s or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
But it was Mr. T, or B.A. Baracus, Hannibal Smith, Howling Mad Murdoch, and help me, Jack, Face. What was it?
The Face. I have no idea what his name was.
I can't remember, but... they were four fugitives running from the government, but, like, while they were on the lam, they were also helping people solve crimes and take care of stuff, like problems they had that no one else could help them with, like Renegades for Hire kind of stuff. It was so much fun. It was a blast. But when when I describe such a show to you, what kind of band would you expect, or musician, rather, expect to make a cameo on a show like this?
Yeah, they're like military fugitives.
Military fugitives? Some sort of like classic rock band, maybe? Like 70s rock? Yeah.
I wouldn't say so. What about you, Randy?
Yeah, I'd say that, but I'm sure you're leading with this somewhere, so it's a trash.
Why would I elaborate so on if I weren't? No, it was Boy George. Boy George
made
an appearance
on the A-Team.
Oh.
And, yeah, and, you know, Boy George has some good music and nothing wrong with Boy George, but that's just it. It doesn't fit the aesthetic of the A-Team, so that was so weird. I don't remember what it was, like he had come to town to play in a, like some little Western bar for some reason. I would think Boy George would be capable of filling a much bigger venue at that time than some little Western bar, but the A-Team...
I feel like in the 80s, Boy George would have got shot in a Western bar, but continue.
Yeah, well, yeah, probably, but they were there to protect him and solve some mystery. It was just so out of place, even as a kid. I'm like, the fuck?
Did he play himself in the episode? Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. Because I have somewhere the audio from the commercial advertising it, and I can't find it.
You put that in the show.
I did, and I tried to look for it again, and I'm not sure where it went. But
this week on the A-Team, Boy George.
Yeah, and then you see Hannibal Smith being like, ladies and gentlemen, Boy George!
Tuesday, guess who's coming to the A-Team?
Boy George and the Culture Club!
And the action is
too marvelous for words.
So get in on the act, because things are going to be rocking and stomping.
What next?
When Boy George meets the A-Team, Tuesday.
I'm rolling.
It was funny. But anyway, that's my pick, and we are now back around to Lex.
All right, cool. I guess I'm going to continue with the people from the UK. This is also kind of piggybacking off of my previous pick. You guys know Kingsman, the Golden Circle?
Yes.
The second Kingsman movie? Okay, so I don't like that movie. I think that Kingsman, yeah. the Kingsman the Secret Service is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, mm-hmm. It's really good.
Oh, so good.
I love how it is, you know, self-aware, the action is great, you know, the acting is great, all the actors do a great job, and the story is great. And it's just really well executed on all of its fronts, and I think that Kingsman 2 really fell short of all of that. But the one thing that I really liked about Kingsman 2 was that Elton John played himself.
Yes.
And that's right.
Not really like a cameo role either. Like, he played himself and he had like a major role.
Really,
and it was
did.
Really funny. Yeah, it was really funny. So like the main villain, I forgot who plays the villain. It was
Julian was that her name? Julian Anderson? Julian Anderson's X-Files. Shit.
Yeah, she's a redhead, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So many things. Oh,
I keep wanting to say Julie Andrews, but it starts with a J. I think her last name is J.
It's Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Julianne Moore plays like the villain in that movie. And for some reason, she ends up just kidnapping Elton John and forcing him to perform for her and just her. In this like really outlandish like costume, and eventually when the heroes come and, you know, destroy kind of her home base and the place where she's operating from, Elton John also breaks free from his chains and drop kicks her in the face.
That's right.
And he just does some really crazy stunts in this one, and I found that it was very entertaining, even if the rest of the movie was kind of garbage. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I do love the Kingsman concept, though. I just don't think that they executed it very well in the second one.
Yeah, I like the whole aspect of trying to like get his memory back. Like, that whole part seemed pretty cool, if you remember that part.
I do remember that part, but just in general, bringing Harry back was kind of like ham-fisted. You know, I feel like the first movie established so much and had such high stakes by having him die.
Yes.
That just kind of bringing him back was a unsophisticated way to bring back Colin Firth, who everyone wanted to see again, right? Like, everyone was like, oh, Colin Firth is gone. I don't know if I'm going to see this next one, so they had to bring him back. It was interesting seeing him trying to get his memory back. Like, I did like that part. But I just feel like the supporting cast was, like, not as compelling. You know, the American version, like, the Statesman was, like, not that compelling. And, like, Julianne Moore wasn't that good of a villain. I feel like Samuel Jackson was an amazing villain in the first film. I just really feel like he has this kind of like eco-fascist mindset that is starting to come out lately because of the pandemic, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously you have to go back and watch it, but I really feel like if you have a twisted enough mind, listen to Samuel L. Jackson talking about his villainous plot in Kingsman, and you might think that he has a point, you know? Mm-hmm. I just really love that movie.
That's what makes a good villain. That's what makes a good villain, right?
Yeah.
Relatability.
Yeah, totally.
It's crazy how that movie, that second movie, shit the bed so hard when the first one was so good. Because, like, that church scene, always comes to mind. But it was such a far cry, and it honestly has me worried because there's a new one coming out, The King's Man, and I want to see that. But, boy, does it have me kind of worried.
The second one, they had to bring Channing Tatum in, too, so...
Yeah, I know. And he didn't even play, like, a good role. He just he was in half of the movie and he disappeared. I don't know. It just kind of sucked. But the third one is supposed to be a prequel. I'm not really that into prequels in general. I don't really feel like there's a need for me to see how the Kingsman got established. Like, I don't need to know that. But, you know, I'll watch it because I love the first one so much. Like, the reason I watched Kingsman: The Secret Service was I just saw it in a movie theater as a part of a trailer. And I looked at it, I was like, I have no idea what this is, but this trailer is amazing. And then a year later, when the movie finally came out, I went to the theater to see. I was like, I've been waiting for this for a year. And I watched it, and I just never went back. Like, can you believe that I discovered this movie through a trailer, and it actually worked, and it made it one of my favorites?
That is crazy. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Man,
it's good when that happens, because a lot of movies that you're like, oh, I can't wait to see this, because you know about it for a while. And then you go see it and you're like, oh.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like the end result never matches the hype, but in this occasion.
Yeah, I feel that way about Incredibles 2, right? Like, it had been building, the hype has been building up for like 10 years. And then I went to see it. I'm like, this is not good. Like, the story isn't good, and the message isn't good. Just, like, very tone deaf for, like, the modern age. Yeah. And I just didn't enjoy it. I thought the first Incredibles was amazing.
I was
excited about the second installment because I thought that they would, like, take it to new places. But they didn't. They just kind of retreaded the same old stuff. And I did not have that experience with Kingsman because there were no expectations for me to disappoint because I didn't know what it was.
Right. Man, I hope that new one's good. I really do. I get the whole prequel thing, though. I understand because it seems like that whole thing's overdone. But all the same, I would love to see that franchise find its footwork again and maybe get back on track because it just... Man, the second one just seemed like a parody almost. It was so out there and so freaking crazy. And again, the Elton John thing was cool, but at the same time, like, to imagine anything like that in the first one seems like unfathomable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like Elton John just took it to like a new level of ridiculousness, which is kind of one of the main things that marred the second film. Was it was just way too over the top and campy and tried to do too much that it already did in the first film and just took it to like worse places.
They tried to take it to 11, but that didn't really go that far.
This one goes to 11. Oh, very good. Very good. Very good. And that brings us over to Jack.
How about Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas when Flea makes an appearance?
He was on my list.
Was he?
Not even for that movie. He's been in so many movies.
This is the one that came to mind for him. Because it was just great when the main character's just in the bar and he starts tripping out and he walks into the bathroom and then Flea turns around and he's all in slow motion with a real deep voice. He's just like, I spilled my acid. Want to lick my jacket? And then they just go onto this weird trip. It's hilarious.
Oh my God!
And Flea with long hair too is kind of crazy seeing him,
right?
Because he's had short or bald or short blonde hair.
It's always crazy to see him. Like he was in Son-in-Law, and he was like a tattoo artist in that movie. He had great big bugged eyes, and I mean, I think he just had his normal appearance, like he has when he's with the Chili Peppers. But then also, do you remember in Big Lebowski? He was one of those like Russian musicians or something.
The Germans or something like
the
that
Germans,
they were chasing.
That's what they
were. He's the one that got his pinky cut off, wasn't it? Was a pinky toe? Was he the one that they actually cut it off from?
I don't remember.
Because it wasn't actually Tara Reid's toe. It was one of those guys that got their toe cut off.
Time for a rewatch.
Yeah, really.
Never tired of that movie.
I wonder how many movies he's been in. And they're always perfect little small spots just for him, though.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, that one. He's been in so many. I love to look at his IMDb. I'm going to have to do that, actually, because it's probably just endless.
I just pulled it up. At least 22, it says. Toy Story 4 he was in?
Really?
Does it say who he was?
No. It's just showing a list of movies he's been in. It doesn't say who he was, though.
I can't think of who he would have been, but there were so many.
That was another pick of mine, Flea in Toy Story 4. How about
that?
Yeah,
sure.
Care to elaborate, Jack?
Yeah, he did a voice.
In Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
Very good, Jack.
Right.
Randy, what you got?
All right, I'm going to cheat a little. I've got three really quick watch and you'll miss it type cameos. The first one is in the movie Hook, the Robin Williams movie.
Yeah.
Phil Collins has like a real quick bit in it. He's the investigator that's talking to Robin Williams after his kids first go missing.
No shit.
What?
Yep. He's got like glasses and it's like not very much. It's literally like 3 seconds. The next one, you've got Alex Van Halen in RoboCop. He's being interviewed by the news crew, like as they're like going over like the deterioration of Detroit, and then shit.
How is Alex related to Eddie?
They're brothers, aren't they?
They're brothers, yeah.
I don't. I'm not even aware of Alex Van Halen. Who is he?
He's the bass player.
Okay, I'm sorry, my Van Halen knowledge isn't very deep. I just turn on the record and just rock out.
I think he's the bass player. I don't think he's a drummer.
Oh, my dad is probably like. Kind of disown me now.
Get off of that show, Randy.
You're not to see those boys again.
No, he is the drummer. My
you
bad.
Are not allowed.
I'm sorry. Continue, Randy.
Crap. Hang on. My thing just crashed.
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. Randy.
Randy. forget the third one. Just go on. Sorry.
All right. See, my next, I've got two here that poke their heads into the same movie franchise. Long after the franchise had hit its prime, the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Yes.
And I believe it was Keith Richards who played his father, Johnny Depp's father, in one of the films, and then in another one, Paul McCartney actually plays like a pirate in jail at one point.
No, I didn't know Paul was in.
Yeah.
Keith Richards was the only one that I knew of, Mr. Death himself.
Yeah, he's in. No shit, there's got to be like a pirate curse keeping that asshole alive. How is happening? But Paul McCartney's in maybe the one after. I don't know. The first three I thought were fun enough, but after that, it's like, all right, really? Johnny Depp need money.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen. I think I've seen the third one, the one after that, or the two after that, or however many they are. I haven't seen
the one after the Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley arc. Like after that, I just got uninterested. Anywho, that's my pick, which brings us back around to Lex.
Nice. Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean was a really good series. I mean, I think I enjoyed the first three, maybe even the fourth one. I think the fourth one had like mermaids in them. It was a good series, but I haven't seen anything past the fourth one. But I remember like really liking that series. I can't believe it was based off of a like roller coaster, right?
Right. Yeah.
Water ride thing. Yeah, it's crazy because then they modified the ride to actually portray the movie, and it's a cool ride. Don't get me wrong, but they added like. The like an animatronic Johnny Depp and a animatronic Davy Jones and stuff. Like they dressed it up, but it still has a lot of the original pirates and stuff in it as well.
That sounds super rad.
It definitely was.
I haven't ever been to a Disney park, and I can't go now because they're all closed. But maybe one day when all this is over. I can finally go to Disney and experience the ride.
You really need to. I mean, those theme parks are something else. But I always say, like,
they
Universal,
really are. Yeah.
You when you go to Universal, you have a lot of fun. But when you go to Disney, you And I'm talking like Disney World. I've never been to Disneyland. And though I had fun in the other Disney parks, it's Disney World that you really experience some like magical shit. Like you really leave there feeling like a little kid. It's miraculous at what they can do.
All right, I'm going to make that my next thing once I can travel again.
Yeah, don't go now. Don't go now. It's not worth the run.
Yeah, hell no. Yeah, all right, so I guess it's my turn. Yeah, let's make the pivot to TV shows. You probably all know that South Park has a lot of celebrity cameos, so I had to find one out of all the celebrity cameos in there that I thought was the most compelling. And I think this one's pretty entertaining. So are you familiar with the episode where Stan's dad, Randy, shows, like, is talking about how he's actually Lord, like the singer? Yeah, you know, yes.
Sitting at home on a Wednesday. Feeling good.
Isn't that episode... Okay, you all get it. This is great. I don't have to explain anything. I mean, this is like a cultural cornerstone. I feel like I wouldn't be on the Nerd Podcast if the other three podcasters didn't know about this episode.
Oh, definitely. But, I am Lord. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lord.
I am Lord. I just feel it was an incredible episode, considering that the later episodes, like the later seasons of South Park were... not quite as compelling to me as, like, earlier seasons, which is the stuff that I grew up with. Like, I feel like South Park's heyday was probably between season 5 and maybe, like, season 10 or 11. But I think this Lord episode was, like, season 17 or 18 or whatever. But it was a really good episode. And the really funny thing is that when Randy auto-tunes his voice to become Lord, they have like a track that's supposed to be Lord, but it's not actually Lord singing. It's Sia who does Chandelier.
No,
yeah,
shit.
Who does Chandelier and like yeah. And what other songs does Sia have? The Titanium with David Guetta. You know, I am Titanium. Yeah. So it's actually Sia who does singing for "quote unquote Lord," but that's only after it was auto-tuned.
That's an MP3 I've got in my arsenal. I might have to fit that in this episode somewhere now. That one is. Oh, I love that song. It's so good. And that episode, man, I'm so glad you brought that up. I did not know that, though. See, I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I just think it's so entertaining that, like, he does the yeah, I am Lord, yeah thing. And then he just, like, turns up the auto-tune up to 11 and just magically becomes Sia singing "Feeling Good" on a Wednesday.
Oh, my God. Like one of his recordings, like, in a bathroom stall, just, like, as he was taking
sitting on
crap.
The toilet. Yeah.
It turned into a hit. Oh, my God. I love that show so much.
And she actually loved that she was on that show, too. I remember seeing it was like some award show or something like that she was sick, so she couldn't go. Her mom wouldn't let her go to the award show, so she just, like, Skyped in or whatever on video. And then she was just like, yeah, it's so great that I was on South Park.
I'm really entertained by the fact that after that episode came out, there are so many people who are bothering the real Lord about whether she knew about her quote-unquote cameo in this episode. They're like coming at her saying yeah I am Lord, yeah, and then like at some point in an interview she actually goes yeah I am Lord.
She did it herself.
So she finally, she accepted it.
That's amazing.
It's so cool when you know, big stars like that can roll with the punches. And, you know, South Park also has taken their jabs at Al Gore with Man Bar Peg. And
oh God, I love that episode.
it was like footage from a commercial break when Al Gore was on The Daily Show. And like while they do commercial breaks, they take questions from the audience and someone asked him about it. And he was just, he said he loved it, was thrilled. He just got the biggest kick out of it. And I thought that's really cool because you would think someone in his seat would probably be really uptight about something like that. But no, he
yeah.
the man bear pack.
And you, and you know who kind of like had a stick up their butt about it? It was Kanye West when they were talking about like fish sticks and stuff.
I'm a gay fish.
Like, absolutely hated that cameo.
That was so funny, though. At the end, when he just, like, I gotta stop denying who I am, and he just dives into the ocean.
Yeah.
Grinding on whales and shit.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Oh, that was a good pick. That was a good pick.
Thank you.
Jack, that brings us back to you, sir.
Mine is, you guys might not, Randy, you might know it just because you got kids, but it's a group called Bear. It's actually just three letters, B-E-R. But they're kind of an 80s sound group, but they were featured on Teen Titans Go. It was like a movie that they did. Yeah, and it's this whole, I want to say, I think, what's his name? Cyborg disappears into this other dimension, and they end up, the rest of the team, they go and fight him, and then there's some dragon that's holding him hostage. And it's all the whole show is based off this one song called The Night Begins to Shine. It's a freaking amazing movie. It's, I want to say it's like an hour. They put it into like four parts.
Okay.
But like the CeeLo Green, they do a version of it, and CeeLo Green's actually in the episode as well. Also, Fallout Boy is in it too. But it's,
wow.
I'll have to show you guys the song. It's a freaking amazing song. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's just because the 80s sound. It's a lot of that 80s synth in it too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
Yeah. I don't have the MP3. Next time, if we ever get out of this Corona debacle, we can see each other face to face again. I'll let you guys check it out.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, that does.
Better probably find it on YouTube and watch the whole movie because it's a great episode. It's probably one of their best episodes. It's not real cheesy and corny like the rest of their shows are. It's actually a really good one.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that. I need to check that out.
B-E-R.
Bear. Let's bring this, which brings us back over to Randy.
So I found my third one from the last one. It was Blink 182's cameo in American Pie. They had a quickie, no pun intended.
Oh, they were. That's right. Yeah.
When the video was going viral and getting shared.
Yes.
Like, yeah. So that's not what I wanted to talk about this one. I wanted to just shout out one of my favorite movies, which is Labyrinth with David Bowie.
Yes.
And that movie would not be anywhere near the same, I don't think, if he wasn't in that. So I just.
Oh, no. No way it would.
You think
you couldn't have a movie without Jareth.
I mean, you'd have a movie with Jennifer Connelly in it, which, it was passable.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, but you know what? Wizard of Oz would have been nothing without Judy Garland.
All right. Yep, I'm done. Have a good night, guys.
I think that was a perfect note to end this conversation on because, my God, we are running long. But that's the making of a great conversation. You lose track of time, and this has been a lot of fun. But now we have to turn our attention, and we're going to keep having fun. I didn't mean to say we're going to stop having fun. We're going to keep having fun by talking with Lex, the Lexicon artist, more about her music. Lex, I want to thank you so much for being here and, again, being part of the conversation. It's been a blast thus far.
I have had a really good time, and all of these like cameos and of musicians in TV and movies is hopefully giving the audience some information that they didn't know, right? Like these small little like trivia pieces that someone listening might respond in this I didn't know that that was them kind of way. I think that has been really entertaining. I've learned a lot too.
Then our job here is done, it would seem, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We have filled our quota for the week. Fantastic. But no, this has been a blast. But I've got to talk to you more about this music. We've been checking it out leading up to recording this episode. And my God, your music is a lot of fun. It's infectious. It's high energy. I love it. It's really good. But for our listeners who may not be aware of you, can you describe yourself and your music to them?
Sure. I've been working on coming up with a concise way of describing my music, but I think for the purpose of this podcast, I'll say that I make lyrically intricate pop rap that is for nerds and for people who like weird shit. And it's about emotions, it's about nerd culture, it's about weird stuff, it's about being weird, it's about being an outcast, and it's about being yourself and really owning your identity.
And that's a great message to be pushing out there, because I think a lot of people struggle with that on the daily, you know, finding out who they are, knowing who they are, being comfortable in their own skin. With your music, though, do you, I take it then that's the message you're putting in a lot of the music?
The message of being yourself and owning your identity?
Yeah. I noticed that your first album was titled like Raging Ego, and then your next album that's coming out March 31st is called Alter Ego. It seems to be something there, like I don't know if you have a running theme going with these albums or what.
Yeah, totally. I feel like I work with a lot of different types of content, and sometimes I'll do fandom focused songs or fandom focused albums. But for my main albums that are full length, I think for the most part they're like digital journals. They're sound chronicles of my life and my process and my journey of finding myself and becoming comfortable with my identity and showing it loud and proud and being comfortable with being weird and different. I do think that that is the message that I want to send with both of these albums, but I do it in kind of different ways. And I think the second album, Alter Ego, my goal for it was for it to be a lot more nuanced and for it to explore darker sides of your identity that you may not want to face a lot of the time.
That's true.
For the most part, I want to push this message of finding somewhere you belong and finding where you belong within yourself. And being comfortable to be yourself, even if the way you do things is different from how other people do things.
Now, I'm very curious about, and this might be sacrilegious for me to even ask, being on a nerd-centric podcast, but, you know, I've heard of, you know, when it comes to music like nerd culture / nerdcore, I think those are the same things. Forgive my ignorance if they're not. As far as nerd culture intertwined with music, what does that mean exactly? I mean, the first things that kind of come to mind, does that mean like, okay, there's like 16-bit sound effects in there? I don't know exactly what that means, I guess.
I mean, I really think it's anything. I think it's, you know, content and media, like TV shows and movies targeted for nerds. People who create music for those TV shows, or people who create music about those TV shows or about movies that are kind of directed towards more of a nerdy audience. Like the immediate example that I can think of is actually someone that I had on my cameo list, which is Logic. He's a rapper from Baltimore, I think, or Maryland, somewhere in that area. And he showed up as a cameo on Rick and Morty playing himself, right? Now, that kind of cameo is like a cameo that I would love to have.
Awesome.
Where it's, you know, a rapper showing up as himself, rapping a song on this, like, TV show that's about science fiction. And it's mostly targeted towards these, you know, edgy, nerdy viewers. And, you know, that isn't just the extent of that isn't the extent of nerd culture, I would say. You know, there's even more ways to kind of interpret it. I think it's just a crossover of anything that can be considered of a more nerdy, and by nerdy I mean passionate about a very specific topic. So I really think it's an intersection content that would otherwise be considered more nerdy, such as TV shows, movies, comic books, anime, you know, even academic topics. Like, I like to incorporate a lot of philosophy and psychology into what I write. And also, like, technology. There are a lot of people who write about hacking, like computer hacking or programming. And basically, I would say that incorporating nerd culture into music is just taking something that's pretty hyper-focused and then applying it to whatever your musical outlet might be. That might be rap music, that might be folk music, it might be rock music, but there are so many forms within just a small specific community of how people choose to express themselves and their passion for certain topics. And I would say that is how you incorporate, you know, nerd culture into music. And in a lot of situations, it kind of, you know, circles back around where these songs end up being featured in, you know, TV shows and movies themselves, or at least that's the goal.
Right. And it just kind of comes down to the process, I guess, what you're saying. There's no definitive answer on what exactly nerd culture is when it comes to music. Everyone has their own way of expressing themselves. Kind of like, I don't know, just being in the business. Everyone has their own way of getting to where they've been. There's no one uniform way of really getting there. I'm very interested in your writing process. You know, speaking of something that's very unique on an artist by artist basis is the creative process. It's typically not the same for two people. So when you're writing your music, like, do you have a ritual, a process that you fall into?
I usually take one or two or a mixture of a couple of different workflows. I like to say that it's not a science, it's an art. That's what I like to say. It's not a science, it's an art. There's not a fixed formula that you can follow to create a song. And there's a lot of room for being creative and mixing together multiple different workflows. But there are a couple of workflows that I follow. One of them is, if I have a specific concept for a song that I want to make into a song, first I write an entire essay about it. I write it in like long form, and then I condense it into short form. So I start taking the main ideas of what I want to write about in the song, and then I make it into rhyme. I make it into like a poem, essentially. And then I condense it into a very specific, strict verse, chorus form. So that's one workflow. Another workflow is I come up with this like melodic tune for a chorus, right? Generally, a lot of times when I start writing music, the melody for the chorus or the words for the chorus are the first thing that I come up with. For example, there's a new song that I just released as a single for the new album, and I came up with the chorus before I came up with anything else. And the chorus is basically this: I'm gonna party hop, whoa, I'm gonna party hop, whoa. And it's just that repeated over and over and over. And then from there, it kind of like blossoms outwards, right? Now I have this central idea of party hopping, going from party to party. And then I craft a verse one that leads into the chorus, and then out of the chorus, I go into the verse two, and then I have a bridge and all that stuff. But it's using the chorus as this kind of like the center focal point that branches outwards. So that's another workflow. And there's another workflow where I get a pre-made beat from someone. It's not necessarily a song that I compose, although I do a lot of composing. I do a lot of beat making and creating music as well, but sometimes I might receive a beat from someone who makes beats for a living. And I get the beat, I hear it, and I like it a lot. And so I have like already a musical framework from which to work. And what I do is I just come up with the chorus that matches this beat, this pre-existing beat, and then I write the song to the beat. Whereas other workflows require me to come up with the musical idea first and then write the words to it. Sometimes I might write the words first and then come up with the music to go with it. That has to happen with a couple of songs, but really it's hard to predict. Essentially, I just have to have a really strong concept to start with, or I have to have a really strong musical idea to start with. I can never really predict which one it's going to be, but a lot of times the combination of both.
It's really cool that you have all those different avenues. Like if one's not working, you have all these different ways that you can try and flesh something out. I love hearing the creative process at work. That's so awesome.
Now, thank you. Yeah.
You said your second album is coming out again, Alter Ego. That's again March 31st, available for pre-order out there. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, the second album is going to be a little bit darker than the first one was. Raging Ego seemed to be very kind of high energy, a little bit faster. So Is this, you know, I think you said it's going to be a look at like the darker sides of ourselves. Maybe we sometimes don't want to face. Is that, is the music going to take a darker tone itself?
It will. It absolutely will. And it, the singles that I have out right now are actually quite deceptive. I specifically chose singles that were very upbeat, but there's a lot of notes of darkness and melancholy in the rest of the album. And I think that I wrote this album within the last year and a half. Granted, mm-hmm. things were not as bad as they are now, obviously. But right. Yeah, I learned a lot and I went through a lot of, I think, emotional growth throughout this last year and a half. And this album chronicles my path through destroying and rediscovering who I was. So I don't necessarily see myself in, well, I don't know if I should say that, but a lot of raging ego, to me, when I listen to it now, it feels a little bit distant because I've taken the person I was during Raging Ego and kind of like mangled it and rearranged it into something different. Like, all the core parts are still there, but now they're in a different configuration, I think in a better configuration, in a more positive configuration, but it took a lot of work to get there. So in essence, I think Alter Ego is kind of an examination of, kind of a rough examination of how I made it there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And let me clarify really quick, because that question I asked sounded stupid as all hell. Of course, it's going to have a darker tone. I guess what I was meaning is, you know, sometimes you have musicians who can write a certain way, but, you know, write a I don't know, it's so hard to explain. Write something that might be a sad message or a sad song, but still have it to upbeat music. I just didn't know if like the actual music itself was going to match the tone, or if we were still going to have like a very kind of upbeat album, just delivering a different message.
Oh God, no, you like, you explained it perfectly and I understood what you meant exactly.
Okay.
And
perfect.
My answer to you is yes. Like, the tone of this album is a lot darker. Like, okay. The musical feeling of this album is a lot darker. I use a lot more minor keys. I use a lot more cold colors. So I have color sound synesthesia, which means I assign colors to certain sounds. And the majority of this album is actually cold colors like purple or lavender or, you know, blue or cyan or sometimes like dark green. But there were a lot of warm color songs in Raging Ego. And Alter Ego has a lot fewer of those. Like, even some of the more upbeat songs still have like a, you know, a cold color palette. So I knew exactly what you meant. And okay. My answer to that is yes, it will like sound musically darker as well. Like, not just the lyrics. The lyrics are still, the lyrics are obviously even darker than Raging Ego's. I think, you know, Raging Ego was already pretty, it's pretty open and vulnerable. But I think I take a dive deeper in Alter Ego lyrically. But musically, I think it definitely reflects the mood overall, save for some of the songs. There are a couple of, you know, kind of whiplash songs that will suddenly take you back into this like positive place. But I swear that it has something to do with the story of the album too. Like, there's a reason why all of a sudden it's like super peppy and then all of a sudden it goes back into the darkness again. Like, it all makes sense within the context of the album, and I really hope that when people listen to it, they understand it. But, you know, it can be hard to really know what people will pick up from their listen. I just do my best to hope that they get the message that I'm trying to deliver. But part of the fun of someone listening to an album is also how they interpret it themselves. So maybe people will have different interpretations of the message that I'm trying to send. Maybe not everyone's gonna process it the same way, and that's fine too. Like, art is open to interpretation.
Exactly. That's awesome, and I cannot wait to hear it. I haven't heard anything off the new album yet, but for people who would like to get an early listen, on March 30th at 10 p.m. To midnight Eastern time, you're having a listening party right before the album's release, correct?
Yeah, totally. I'm very excited about it. I've done this before with Raging Ego the night before that one was released. And yeah, we're doing it again, essentially. And we are all going to gather in a Discord, and we're going to have a live chat. Everyone's going to listen to the album. If you want to, you can participate vocally by turning on your microphone and talking in the Discord channel. Or if you just want to listen to it, If you just want to listen and be like an audience member, you can go to geekbeatradio.com.
Very good. And for people who want to check out more about Lex and her music, head over to thelexiconartist.com. And you can also find her on social media, Instagram and Twitter at Lex the Con Artist. Lex, is there anywhere else we should be directing people?
Gosh, probably Google. Just Google Lex the Lexicon Artist, and you can find this episode as well as all of my socials and all of my internet properties.
Awesome. Great to hear. And Lex, thank you so much for being here. This has been one hell of a good time, and we're going to have to get you back in the future.
That would be great. I had such a good time interviewing with all three of you. And yeah, you were some of the best hosts I've ever had.
Oh, wow. 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 Making us blush here. Wow. Wow. Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take it. Thank you so much. Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to CandairPodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page or even call us.
Yeah, 614-254-3332. And please don't be afraid. We're not going to answer. You can just leave that message and go on your merry way, whether it be good, bad, happy, sad. We want to hear it. We want to hear it once more. 614-254-3332. But if that's not the method for you, then head over to Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air, where you can reach out to us there, see the attempts at me trying to be funny here and there on our feed, and also posts on episodes. And once again, the Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. $5 a month gets you the Patreon pod. Gentlemen, what else am I forgetting?
Syndication, Randy.
Sorry.
Is he even there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. Yeah. No, I'm here. All right.
Just leave.
He's across the room. Yeah. Randy!
All right. So check us out on CuyahogaValleyRadio.com and RedlineRadioLLC.com every morning.
Very good, Randy. You can go back to doing whatever it was you were doing in the
go
corner.
Go back to sleep.
We're going to be continuing our residency with the band Adam Era next week. And today we are going to be going out on the latest single off of Lex's new album, Alter Ego, called Famous. So stick around at the end of the episode for that. And I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I'm Lex, the Lexicon Artist.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
That I made with my mind. If you feel anxious as our fates intertwine, it's by design. Take my hand and let me in your soul. It's with your help that we can get to my goals. With little effort you can give me control. I'm on a roll.
friend, I'm your advocate. I'm your agent, I'm your management. Let me in and I can show you all my magic tricks. Cause you're a masochist, feel inadequate. But I can see how your business is so passionate. You plan for this, and that means I'll always be here. So let go of your fear of abandonment. I don't ask too much, just a pledge of allegiance. To act in the posture of legend. My creed is repress your emotions. I'll empty your secrets. I'm keeping them all on the edge of their seats. And they'll never forget you, they'll envy your genius. I'll give you the best open-ended agreement. You give me your all, and I'll take what you need. I'll live in your soul, and I'll make you succeed. Give me everything I want.
Puppy. Oh no!
Don't run, it'll only make things worse.
Mutt!
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up. And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Sorry about that. My internet glitched and you guys got really like glitchy right there for a second.
Glitched my ass. We said Randy and you're like, oh.
I'm in the bathroom.
I was fucking around with my microphone. Leave me alone.
Pants dude. Around his ankles, scampering.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.